Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Ahead on NFL Live, when and where will we see players as they wait on word regarding off-season workouts? We'll talk about the next step as the league continues to reopen. Also ahead, we keep on answering the biggest questions of the off-season, including how the rookie quarterbacks will fare in their first season. And Chris Berman back with the next installment of the top plays in NFL history. Boom takes us through perhaps the greatest fake ever pulled off, and we're pretty sure Jets fans have still not gotten over it. Happy to have you with us. I'm Wendy Nix. Jeff Darlington is here. So too is Booger McFarlane and Rob Ninkovich. Dominique Foxworth joins us in just a few minutes. NFL players are not expected to be back in their team facilities until training camp. That's according to our Adam Schefter, though no official camp dates have been announced. Commissioner Roger Goodell has also informed teams they must hold camp at their main practice facilities, which also means no joint practices. Jeff, what more can you tell us about the NFL and their plans ahead for training camp?
Well, this certainly follows suit with the NFL's main goal that they set in place probably about a month ago when they began formulating protocols. The first step was toward getting anybody in the building when they would allow 75 people to enter into their facility without allowing coaches in, without allowing players that were not doing rehabilitation. This then is the next step, the next set of protocols toward eventually playing games. The NFL, while sometimes I think we say that maybe they're being naive to the idea of being able to play games in stadiums with fans, would rather take this step by step with an ultimate goal in sight and then make adjustments as they go, as opposed to maybe getting caught without a plan. And this is the next step. So protocol two, they will have certainly many aspects, many health factors, many safety precautions in place to make sure that when they do allow training camps to begin, the teams will have to follow those rules in order to go ahead forward with their camps.
And you know what, Jeff, we're often critical of the league, and it's sometimes warranted. In this case, I do feel like they've been relatively ahead of things with their plans so far. But Rob, I'll ask you this. What we do know now is not having organized team activities and mini camps is a reality, at least nothing physically. They'll be done virtually. Will that have any effect on the quality of play?
I think it will have an effect. I think the younger athletes, the younger quarterbacks, receivers, guys that haven't established themselves in their careers yet, I say years 1 through 4, those are the guys that need those valuable reps under center to see defenses. Those reps are very, very vital because, look, if you've made it past the fourth year, if you're in your fifth year, sixth year, seventh year in the NFL, you really don't need those OTAs or mini camps. You know what it takes. You can get your body right. I'm concerned with guys that maybe they're not working out as hard as they should. I remember when we had the lockout and guys came back and some guys weren't in shape. Some guys were in shape. The guys that took care of business and they were in shape, you weren't concerned about potentially injuring themselves. So another thing that I worry about is injury. If you go out there too soon and you're not ready for contact, or if you're not ready to do a full sprint, that's when you have your soft tissue injuries and you see the hamstrings. You could see knees, more knees. It's unfortunate to say, but when you're not doing all the little things in the offseason, the running, the cutting, the squatting that you're normally doing, it could have an injury. And if you're a young player, like a quarterback in your first year that needs those reps and OTAs and minicamp, that could affect you in the regular season.
Yeah, Rob, I would just add to that is that, you know, if you're a younger team with the head coach that's only been there, if this is year one or year two, I think you could struggle. I think you're going to see teams that have established continuity at the head coaching position, at the quarterback position. Those teams are going to thrive. Just look at the New Orleans Saints. They basically canceled the entire offseason. Hey, get in shape, get ready to go, because we know the Saints are a veteran team. Yeah, they're going to have some rookies and some young guys, but by and large, They are a veteran team with a veteran head coach. They understand what they have to do.
Okay.
And when they show up to work, they're going to be ready. Younger players are always going to be a little bit behind. And it's going to be just magnified, I think, this offseason based on where we are. But overall, in general, I think when you get to training camp, if teams get their normal 4 to 5 weeks of training camp, there's more than enough time to make up for the learning curve for some of the plays and whatnot that you missed during the OTAs. Overall, I think all coaches, if you told them we could have 5 or 6 weeks and we can get everything done, it may not be perfect, but they'll be in a position where they're ready to compete and compete at a high level early on, I think.
I think you're right, Book. They'll take that at this point. All 32 NFL teams have been told by the commissioner to hold training camps at their home facilities this summer because of the COVID-19 pandemic. That means the Packers, one of 11 teams that may have to break tradition and keep things at their home facility. They've been residing at St. Norbert College every summer since 1958. Switching gears now to news off the field, but nevertheless related to the NFL. It's been 9 days since the tragic loss of George Floyd's life. Peaceful protests continued yesterday, not only in Minneapolis, but around the country as well. And many in the NFL community have weighed in and spoken out. On Instagram, Cowboys quarterback Dak Prescott, still in the middle of contract extension talks, has pledged $1 million to improve police training and address systemic racism, saying, "You have to change yourself before you can ask anyone else to change." And, Boog, every team is looking for leadership from their franchise quarterback. It's part of the job. So what is your reaction to this news from Dak Prescott?
Well, Wendy, I think it speaks volumes about Dak. I think he understands where we are in society. He also understands that his role is to call out what he sees from a racism standpoint, but more importantly, taking the next step in doing something. And who more qualified than Dak Prescott, who's born of a white mother who passed away, God rest her soul, and a black father. So he understands both sides of this racism argument and this racism conversation that's going on across America. And, you know, if you're the Dallas Cowboys and you see your quarterback stepping up and taking the challenge, not only saying something, but doing something. Because so many times, Wendy, it's easy when you're in a position of prominence, when you're in a position of notoriety, to say, you know what, I'm going to just continue living my bubble and I'm not going to do anything about it. And here is the quarterback of America's team saying, you know what, I'm not going to do that. I'm a black man. OK, I have a white mother and I'm going to talk about everything that makes me who I am. So kudos to Dak Prescott. I think more quarterbacks, more people need to step up and do this. You know, there's a biblical scripture that talks about to whom much is given, much is expected. And we know in the National Football League, the quarterbacks, they get all the money. So there's a lot expected of these players at that position. And it's good to see Dak Prescott step up and doing something about it.
It's great to see, actually, Book. Thank you. As we continue with the NFL quarterback theme in Texas, in Houston, to be more specific, Texans quarterback Deshaun Watson attended a march that was led by members of George Floyd's family. Here's reaction now from NFL head coaches, starting with Broncos head coach Vic Fangio.
I was shocked, sad, and angry when I saw the policeman due to a handcuffed George Floyd on his stomach that led to his death. He should be punished to the fullest extent of the law for the crimes he has been charged with, in addition to being charged with treason for failing to uphold the badge and the uniform he was entrusted with. I have the utmost respect and admiration for the police and the job they do under trying circumstances.
First, acknowledge my own personal privilege, one that's real. I'd like to acknowledge a social blind spot that either I was unaware of or chose not to see. I've had the unbelievable opportunity to listen to our players the last 2 days in our team meetings. You know, listen to them with an open mind and hear and learn what they believe in and how they feel. Amy, John, and myself have tried to put great people and great fathers and great husbands and great student athletes onto our football team. And the majority of those men are African American with a much different experience and background than I'll ever know. And by listening and understanding those thoughts and feelings and how they feel has helped me recognize, I think, what's important.
I think our problems in the NFL along those lines are minimal. We're a league of meritocracy. You earn what you get. You get what you earn. I don't see racism at all in the NFL. I don't see discrimination in the NFL. You know, we live in a great atmosphere. Like I alluded to earlier, we're lucky. We all live together, joined as one for one common goal, and we all intermingle and mix tremendously. You know, if society reflected an NFL team, we'd all be great.
You know, if you listen to that statement, there's a lot of truth in it. Vic talked about it being a meritocracy, and it is, and in the locker room and on the field. But to say there is no racism and no problem, I think really is not recognizing the situation. As you said, you know, the league has talked about having 70 to 75% African-American players and no black presidents, just a couple of black general managers. There are issues there. And it is not a complete meritocracy, even though it's a great place. And I think the same thing could be said of our country. It is a great country. We have a lot of things going on. We have a lot of positive. But let's not say there's nothing wrong.
And with that, we also say hello now to the undefeated Dominic Foxworth, who also served formerly as the NFLPA president. But, Boog, I'll start with you. In your reaction specifically to what Coach Fangio said, followed by your former head coach, Coach Dungy.
Well, I think Tony Dungy echoed it perfectly. That there's some truth to what Vic Fangio is saying. However, you have to kind of read between the lines. If you look at what he says on the surface, that there's no racism in the NFL, he's wrong. Because the NFL just came out and blatantly said that the Rooney Rule needs fixing. There needs to be, starting with up at the top with ownership, there needs to be more black owners, more black general managers, more black head coaches. They changed the Rooney Rule. They were even about to incentivize owners to hire black people. So the NFL has told us that racism exists within the NFL. So Vic Fangio is wrong on that statement. Okay, and I think Tony Dungy said it best. He did say some truth, though, because when you look at the NFL in general, the NFL as a whole is comprised of a lot of different parts. You have what I just spoke of, which is ownership, general manager, coaches. You have that part. Then you have the part that I'm familiar with, that I've been a part of, which is the locker room. And by and large, that's where Vic Fangio has spent most of his time. I'm not going to put Vic Fangio as an owner or GM because he's never been there. He spent the lion part of his career in the locker room, dealing with the players. And I play football at every level, from high school to college to pro. Have I seen racism in the locker room? No, I haven't seen racism blatantly in the locker room. Do I recognize that there are whites and blacks in every locker room? Yes. Do we understand each other's cultures in the locker room? Somewhat. Do we come together for a common goal and understand how we can work together and put whatever differences and whatever backgrounds and whatever economic statuses that we come into the locker room, can we put those aside to come together for one goal, and that's to win? By and large, not perfect, but by and large, locker rooms can do that. It's the one place that I think athletes feel the safest, because we know we're all in that locker room for one common goal. So while the overarching point of what Vic Fangio says is false, because there is racism in the NFL, I just wanted to take it a step further and speak specifically about the part that I was in, which is the locker room. And I'm sure Rob and Dominique can do the same also through their experiences.
Yeah, I don't know that I agree with you, honestly, but like I obviously agree with you that Fangio was absolutely wrong, but like there are issues of race taking place in locker rooms. But I don't think that Vic Fangio is alone in what he says. I think Vic Fangio maybe was not smart enough to keep it to himself. But what scares me is that there are so many other people out there who think this and are crafty enough or smart enough to know that it's stupid to say and are actively behind the scenes not necessarily working against improving the race issues in football, but they aren't working to improve them, which is, I think, the responsibility of the white people in power, from quarterbacks all the way up to team owners. So I think that is more scary than having somebody come out and be dumb enough to say something so wrong and obvious. I'm not going to argue with him, but I'm not. I'm also just not completely comfortable with the idea that football is a complete meritocracy. That's not how I felt when I was there. And I think you can look in the locker room and see the composition of different position groups and know that that's who we hang out with. And those position groups, they are tinged by racism. The reason why there are so many black players at defensive back is because of racism. And the same thing for white players at offensive line and quarterback. Like, these are things that exist in the locker rooms, I experienced in the locker room, and aren't going to go away. So I don't know. I just don't feel the same way. I do feel what you're saying. Like, I felt like I was in a brotherhood many times, and I knew that my white brothers would be there for me on the field, but I didn't think that they would necessarily be there for me off of the field. And I knew that how we got to where we, that we took different paths to get to where we are. And that stuff is like, it hangs around. It doesn't go away. You can't walk from America outside the building to walk into the NFL and suddenly you're in some race neutral bubble. That wasn't my experience.
Dominic, here's the thing I think I would say. You know, if you look around the country right now with the George Floyd situation, black people just want to be heard. We want to be treated fairly. We want to be looked at as equal. Now, I know we will never get to that point based on how we came to this country and how we started. But let's just you and I go inside the locker room. I think by and large, the white players that I encountered in every locker room that I was in treated me the same way they wanted to be treated from a player standpoint. I think the white coaches, My mentor, one of the best men in my life, Rob Marinelli, is a white man that served in the military, and he poured into me like I was his own son. So when I speak of the locker room and the coaches and the interaction, we never saw color. I didn't. It was all about, how can we come together? How can we treat each other with respect? How can we treat each other the way each other wants to be treated? That's what I always felt in the locker room. And I'll just ask, are you saying that you felt something different?
Absolutely. No, I mean, I do see color. And I think that my teammates saw color also. And I would say that there were times on the field when I would have opponents after a game come up to me and tell me about what somebody on my team said to them on the field that was completely inappropriate. It's kind of the bar for what racism is. Like, I've had teammates come up to me and say that they've been called the N-word, and then that carries out. Then the defense hears about it, and then the defense goes and confronts somebody in the locker room. So maybe I had a unique experience. I can't speak for you or anybody else, but I think it's unlikely that it doesn't get into other locker rooms. And I also think, like, I mean, I guess it's an interesting conversation for us to have, but it's also kind of a waste of time, because like that's a small issue. The bigger issues are the ones that we're facing. But I know that since we're on NFL Live, we need to talk about the on-field stuff. And I think it reflects poorly on Vic Fangio as a head coach, because what we saw from Mike Vrabel is him being in the locker room with his guys, understanding how they feel, having connection with them. That translates onto the field. And I like the Broncos a lot, and I think Vic Fangio is a really talented defensive coach and a promising head coach. But the fact that he does not know how his team feels about important issues like this at a time where you should have already had these team meetings with your team, like, that to me is concerning for him as a head coach going forward.
Rob, let me get your perspective, in particular with what Coach Fangio said. You two have been in locker rooms and have a perspective.
Yeah, I disagree with what he says. I disagree especially with the "at all" in what he says. I mean, look, as a player, I'm not an owner. I'm not a coach. I'm not in management. I was a football player, and I was in those positions as a defensive end and a linebacker in a room amongst my peers and my brothers, and we came together and we did something special. And I think as a football player, you're exposed to environments that the outside world, they don't see that, and they're not exposed to those situations. So I think that people cast judgment off of looks, and that's unfair. It's not right. And for me, and the experience that I've had, I feel like in my career, I've been around a ton of different people from different races, backgrounds, age groups,
And we've all been able to come together. And I think if you ask any championship team or a team that have done something very special, they've been able to do that. They put their differences aside and they come together. And the blessing for me was in 8 years with the Patriots, I've always been involved in a championship team, a division, an AFC championship, or a Super Bowl. And the bonds that we were able to form in that team, it's special. And I can go and talk to my friends from the past teams that I've been on. And I know that I have those guys back and they have my back, and I'm going to do anything that I can to support and help change the environment, including my children, and hope that my children, I can instill the values that I learned through football in my children so that the next generation is better and they don't cast judgment and they're a better generation for it. I feel like sport has been able to expose me to things that will teach me lessons to make me a better man. And in that, I can help improve my children's lives, and hopefully everyone else can learn from that who has been involved in sports. So, I mean, I know it's a very difficult thing. And I've been involved in sports my whole life. So, I can't speak about it as a coach. I can't speak about it as an owner. I can't speak about it as management. I can only talk about it as a player.
Yeah. I think that we can all have our own, perspective or experience. Like, I'm not going to question anybody else's experience, but I do think the idea that somehow guys, we accept that everyone is prejudiced in some ways. We accept that none of us are computers that can calculate how to feel about something. We accept that we are influenced by unconscious or even conscious bias. We accept that happens to all of us. Me, Rob, Booger, Wendy, everybody on earth knows that they are influenced by unconscious bias. So I just find it so hard to believe that somehow some of us are able to believe or convince ourselves that when we walk across that threshold into the locker room, when our key fob beeps to unlock the door, that somehow we walk in there. And now all of a sudden, all the things that we carried for all our lives, all the things that we've been taught to believe, and all the things that we know influence us in everywhere we go, influence every workplace, influence every school, influence every family, influence every relationship. Those things, somehow, we cross the threshold from outside in America to some utopia in the locker room, that somehow that all goes away. I personally find that super hard to believe, but I've never won a championship, so maybe that happens on championship teams. I would guess not, but that's just the way that I see it. And I don't know that you guys' experience is different. I don't mean to pass any judgment on you, but it's just hard for me to accept that somehow the NFL locker room just is not like the rest of the world. That's all.
Well, Dominic, to your point, I think everything you said is true. And when you cross that threshold or that key fob beeps, I don't think it goes away. I just think we understand when you walk in that locker room, yes, we come from different backgrounds. Yes, there are certain prejudices that are within everyone, to your point. You're 100% right. Correct. But how do we figure out a way to respect the other side's opinion and respect my opinion and come together? So you have to work with each other when you come in there and right. deal with the prejudice that you speak of, deal with the history that you speak of. Otherwise, if you never do that, then you would eventually get to an America where blacks are on one side yeah. and whites are on the other. You have to come to any common ground, albeit the locker room, the office, wherever you go to, because of the prejudices which you speak of. At some point, in order for us to coexist and live in the world, I'm not going to speak for all black people. Here's what I'll say. I think we just want to be treated the same way that whites are treated. Okay. Now, within that, there has to be some form of dialogue, some form of, I'm not going to even say compromise, but some form of coming together. So to your point, it doesn't disappear when you walk in the locker room, but we understand what we're going in the locker room for. And we also understand, how can we make the world better? How can we be a better example? How can we achieve what we all want to achieve? We have to respect each other's opinions, respect each other's differences, and understand, right. are those to a point where they are going to divide us and not allow us to do our job? Because if they are, eventually, to your point, what it would get to, if we didn't do that, it would be blacks on one side and whites on the other, and we would have two different worlds we're living in. That's the way I see it.
I mean, I feel like we do sometimes, honestly. And I think that you use the operative word. It's a job. So I don't know why. I understand we like to think that football is somehow super different. It's very different from other jobs, but it's still a job. And every job in this country, every workplace in this country, from ESPN to McDonald's to anywhere, they have to figure out a way to work together. So the fact that football players figure out a way to work together does not suggest to me that that it's a utopia. So I know we probably got to go commercial at some point, so I'll stop rambling. But I appreciate y'all having me on to provide this alternative perspective.
Dominique, thank you. We appreciate your perspective,
no problem.
Thanks,
all
Wendy. Of you. And a perspective now from Jaguars owner Shad Khan, who is a Pakistani-American. And he wrote an essay earlier today. And here's an excerpt. Change for all people of color in the United States is long overdue, and it must happen now. Most of all, we cannot fail our children, children who deserve to know they have the same opportunity to earn a living, have a family, and live safely, no matter the color of their skin. Racism in all its forms will kill. It kills people. It kills communities. It kills dreams. It kills hope. For many Americans, now is the moment. Never has that been clearer. More to come on NFL Live. Still to come, Boom is back. He continues to break down the top 50 plays in NFL history. On the docket today, numbers 44 through 42. Plus, Joe Burrow, Tua Tagovailoa, Justin Herbert, and Jordan Love, all first-round picks in this year's draft. How will this pandemic affect their season? We'll talk about that.
With the first pick in the 2020 draft, the Cincinnati Bengals select Joe Burrow.
He goes from a Bayou Bengal to a Cincinnati Bengal.
It's a dream come true.
So he is truly the Tiger King. I'm a
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Throwback Thursday, just one day away, returns tomorrow night featuring a classic matchup from 1994, number 7 Colorado and number 4 Michigan at the Big House, otherwise known as the Miracle at Michigan, 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific on ESPN and the ESPN app. We continue to count down the top 10 questions heading into the 2020 season after revealing numbers 10 through 7 earlier this week. Here's Adam Schefter up next with number 6.
Question number 6, how will rookie quarterbacks fare in this challenging offseason? As tough as it is for rookie quarterbacks to make a mark in their rookie year, this might be the biggest challenge of all, doing it during a pandemic. 4 quarterbacks, Joe Burrow, Tua Tagovailoa, Justin Herbert, and Jordan Love were first round picks. I got big guns, you should follow me, I'm dancing. Barring injury, Love will redshirt, and the Chargers would prefer to wait as long as possible to play Herbert.
Being able to go out there and represent my family in a Dolphins jersey, it's a blessing.
Tagovailoa will have a chance to try to unseat the steady and underrated Ryan Fitzpatrick quickly.
To jump up to number 1 overall is crazy to me. It's a dream come true.
Well, Burrow already has won the job. Burrow has been dug into the Bengals playbook and is said to have picked it up fast. But few rookie quarterbacks succeed, and none ever has had to do it in circumstances this tough.
Boy, isn't that the truth. Since 08, 34 of the 35 quarterbacks taken in the first round went on to start a game as a rookie, with Jake Locker being the sole exception. He sat the entire season behind Matt Hasselbeck. But get this, nearly half of the first round QBs stepped right up to the plate as their team's week 1 starter. All right. Each of you will have you focus on one of the rookie quarterbacks. Everybody's got a whiteboard, although I'm told, Rob, you had to improvise, I believe, right? You going to make do? Yes. Oh, okay. Well done. Fair enough. I like the sparkles we could use right about now. All right. Former LSU All-American Booger, you'll get to go first. How many starts for your fellow alum, Joe Burrow, in Cincinnati? So take your whiteboard. Give me a number.
Well, Wendy, I've already prepared and I've written it down.
Like
Joe
it.
Freaking Burrow will make 16 starts. They didn't draft him number one overall, Wendy Nix, to set him on the bench. Joe Burrow is going to get in this offense. Zach Taylor wants to use his athleticism, his movement skills. And more than anything, you have to be able to get on the job to learn the job. I think, and I always use this one when it comes to Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning stunk his rookie year, but that stinking turned him into a surefire Hall of Famer because he understood what he could do, what he couldn't do, and more than anything, he gained the valuable experience of playing. There's nothing that can take away from learning on the job and having that experience. And I expect Joe freaking Burrow, to play 16 games.
All right, that means he stays healthy, too, because he's got to stay upright for all 16. So we'll keep that in mind, too. Jeff, we'll keep you in the neck of the woods because you're in Florida, so we'll stay in Miami.
Yeah.
How many starts for Tua as a rookie? I guess we're talking starts, not
okay.
wins. So. Okay.
I'll start with the answer. I'm going to say the 2 of 10.
The okay? 2 of 10, okay.
10 starts in 2020. And look, the Dolphins are in a wonderful situation when it comes to the quarterback position at this point. They have a perfect backup, or starter, I should say, in Ryan Fitzpatrick, who is a veteran leader, who is professional, who is competitive, and will do all the things to make this bridge to Tua work. Tua coming into a situation where he won't have all the time to learn the playbook that a rookie might normally have under normal situation. We don't know exactly where Tua's health is. The team wants to be patient with him. All that being said, the idea of redshirting a player, for instance, a rookie, is so misguided. In this day and age, when it comes to the salary cap, you have to win when that rookie is on that rookie deal. And that means you got to get him in as soon as possible. That's why I'm going to say, normally you'd say week 10 after that bye week. That's too late. There's two games. Week 7, week 8 are at home against both LA teams in Miami. A perfect situation to introduce Tua to the NFL. I think he winds up with 10 starts by the season's end.
All right, the 2 of 10. I like it. Rob, in your case, we've got Justin Herbert, but he's competing with Tyrod Taylor for the starting job with the Chargers. So how many starts? We're talking rookies. So how many starts for Justin Herbert with your makeshift?
Okay, so.
Okay, I like it.
Number six, number six overall pick. Is that right? I'm going with
yep.
12 starts. Look, Tyrod Taylor, I've played against him. He's a good quarterback. He's got the mobility. He can run around. I just think that Justin Herbert, he's got all the tools. He's got everything you need to be a great starter. And when you move up, when you are the number six pick in the first round, he might have more than 12. I'm just saying 12 because that's where I think he's going to be at. Tyrod will maybe start out the season. And if things don't go as planned, very, very quickly, you know that Justin's going to be the guy. They're going to push him into that position. He's going to be the starter. They drafted him number six to be the man, to be the guy. So moving forward, he might start 16, but I'm going with 12, okay? That's where I'm at. That's my thought.
You don't have to handicap it. That your number is your number. You can stick with 12. We got you. And we were going to send you a whiteboard.
I'm going with 12.
But we're not going to because yours is better. We like it. So will you just keep doing what you're doing, Rob?
This one's – it's cute. Isn't
yeah,
it cute?
Yeah, no, it's cute. I like it. Is that My Little Pony?
It is.
Okay. Bug knows. We've been there. All right. Perfect. Listen, still to come on NFL Live with Tom Brady, no longer on their roster. He will be the Patriots' new starting quarterback. Is it Jarrett Stidham? Is it Brian Hoyer? We'll continue with our off-season questions, and we revisit our top story. We'll have the latest news around the league and discuss how the NFL can promote social change. Saturday, UFC 250 is live from Las Vegas. Amanda Nunes, the UFC's top female fighter, defends her belt against Felicia Spencer. It's at 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific. And to order the main card in English and Spanish, go to ESPNplus.com/PPV. The reaction to George Floyd's death continues as Vikings linebackers Eric Kendricks and Anthony Barr also weighed in with a joint statement on Twitter in response to the league's response. Your statement said nothing. Your league is built on black athletes. Vague answers do nothing. Let the players know what you're actually doing, and we know what silence means. For more reaction, here's Texans head coach Bill O'Brien a short time ago.
I'm emotional. I'm sad. You guys know that about me, especially here in Houston. I'm sad. I'm frustrated because I'm questioning, like, what can I do? I've got to do more. I've got to – we'll talk to our players. We have a player – call tomorrow. I've been blessed throughout my life to have deep and meaningful relationships with players and coaches who are different than me ethnically. I simply would not have the perspective I have now without these relationships. So to see discrimination of any kind against an innocent man who was murdered out of evil and ignorance, it simply breaks my heart and makes me angry. We have to do better. As a leader committing that we will all have to do better, one thing I know we will not do, we will not virtually meet, whatever the hell that means, on June 9th, which I believe is the day of George Floyd's funeral. We will not meet on that day. So we will encourage the guys that are here in Houston to go to the funeral if we're able to go to that.
And in an update, all four officers now involved in the death of George Floyd have been charged. A reminder of what the Patriots lost with Brady as we visit the Hall of Records. His 249 wins, including the playoffs, are an NFL record. 17 division titles, by far the most of all time. His Super Bowl records are unmatched. 9 trips to the big game and 6 Super Bowl rings to show for it. Earlier in the show, we looked at the 6 biggest question mark heading into the 2020 season. That means up next, number 5. Here's Adam Schefter with the next question in the countdown.
Question number 5. What will happen with New England's quarterback situation? From the moment Tom Brady went to Tampa Bay, many anointed Jared Stidham as Brady's successor. And he may be.
He does so many things that are important to their offense with pocket movement and attacking the middle of the field really well.
I'm sure he'll get out there and be ready to go, be prepared, compete hard, and we'll see where it takes us.
I believe this is Jared Stidham's job to lose, but former Patriots linebacker Rob Ninkovich already has predicted on NFL Live that he believes Brian Hoyer, a veteran of New England's ways and the NFL game, will wind up winning the Patriots starting quarterback job. Others privately have echoed the same sentiment. They know how crafty and underrated Hoyer is.
Here's Hoyer straight back looking. Touchdown! Beautifully thrown by Hoyer!
And so for the first time since Brady unseated Drew Bledsoe, the Patriots just might have the NFL's most intriguing quarterback battle. But whether it's Stidham or Hoyer, this much is certain. It's a new era in New England.
Rob, we will start with you and your former team, and you heard Schefter reference your prediction earlier, but do you still believe that Brian Hoyer will begin the season in New England as the starting quarterback?
Look, no offseason, no mini camp, no OTAs. I talked about it earlier in the show. If you're a younger quarterback, specifically, if you're a young quarterback in the NFL, those are vital reps. So for me, I am sticking with Brian Hoyer as the starter week one. Look, he went out there in the preseason last year, and he carved up the Lions too. So when Stidham went out there, yeah, he carved them up. But if you're a good player in the preseason, you're supposed to carve up people. So for me, I'm sticking with Hoyer. I think that his veteran leadership and his ability to understand what to expect in an NFL season as a starter. I mean, think back when he was with the Browns. He was the man. He tore his ACL. It was bad luck. Hopefully he gets another shot. I think that he's going to get that.
All right, Bug.
Who is this Rob Ninkovich? Yeah. Now, who is this Rob Ninkovich guy that Schefter's referencing? What could he possibly know that would put him in a position to have an opinion here? I actually think Jared Stidham will wind up with the starting job. I felt like the Patriots were convinced of this even before Tom Brady eventually left. I think that Stidham is just the guy in Belichick's head who will be there for week one as the starter. But, you know, I understand. To Ninkovich's point, maybe he knows something that I don't know. But certainly, Brian Hoyer with the experience to get the job done if Stidham does not look quite like the Patriots expect him to.
Whoever Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick chooses, that's who I'm going with.
Oh, look at you.
Shouldn't
goodbye,
you listen
everybody.
To me? Listen to me.